welcome to episode 21 of the Pipe and Slippers Fantasy Football Podcast. I am your host, Roger Kirby, and with me, as always, is Mr. Stephen Midkin.
Hello there, Roger. How are you doing?
I'm very, very well, thank you. And your good self?
Very well. Seems like it's been a long time since we did one of these, but been a busy few weeks and almost just recovering after what was an epic and amazing Super Bowl and finale to the season.
Indeed, I was watching the NFL, inside the NFL, the game highlights today, and was just kind of, it was just literally on NFL Now, so we're talking about like 10 minutes for the first half, sort of 15 for the second, and I completely engrossed and lost in it again. It was just, it was almost kind of rooting for the plays, and you knew what was happening, but you just became engrossed in it again. It was such an engaging, finale to what was a kind of low kind of key affair season that really kind of exploded come playoff time.
Yeah, I think you had a real competitive group of teams getting through to the latter stages of the playoffs. And I think the great thing about the Super Bowl was, from our side as well, being over here in the UK, and you having to stay up till, what was it, about 3:30 by the time it all wrapped up.
Yeah.
Sometimes the late night games in a Super Bowl can just drag and drain on you, and this one, it didn't feel like it was 3:30 a.m. by the time it finished. It
oh no, I was
so wired.
I was wired. I mean, I'd taken 2 days off work, so the Monday and Tuesday, and I was so wired. I ended up staying up for about an hour afterwards, just kind of watching the presentation. Then Deion Sanders going absolutely bonkers about the play call, but it was just so encapsulating, and just you couldn't, you know, take your eyes off it. And as you say, and when we got to the end of the, you know, when Brady threw that pick in the first quarter, and it was like, wow, how have we got to here already?
Yeah, that first quarter went fairly quickly with a couple of longest drives by the Patriots, but not being able to put any points on the board in that first quarter. But yeah, the night seemed to just be really alive the whole time, and we were wide awake through it. And I did take a very tactical 45-minute power nap, though, in the middle. And so you'll have to review the halftime events for this show.
Yes, the wardrobe malfunction I was hoping and praying for didn't really materialise, but there we go.
So I guess we'd just carry on with this and take our review of the Super Bowl, and then as the podcast goes on, we'll look a little bit about our playoff challenge, which obviously finalized with the Super Bowl events, and then we'll discuss a bit of our season takeaways and look ahead to next year, and just talk about where we're going with this podcast going forward. So I think obviously the Patriots came away with the win 28-24, but there's just so many things that happened throughout. What are your overall thoughts from the Super Bowl?
Beyond the final play call, which as much as I've heard people talk about, and as much as Carol has explained it, and as much as, you know, everyone's had their £2 worth, and it still doesn't make sense to me to call, and I think Daniel Jeremiah summed it up best, is if you are going to call a pass play on that down, then, you know, you have to find a way of getting Wilson out on the edge in some way, shape or form. But then at the same time, Butler makes a great play. But I think beyond that, because I think a lot of the rest of the stuff that went down in the game has kind of been lost by that. You know, I thought Wilson was exceptional. I really do. And you know, beyond the, you know, yes, the pick at the end, but, you know, and I know he struggled to complete throws initially, but he's super efficient.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the numbers and the stats of it, if you just look at the box score, it's, you'd think, well, he's not had the greatest game, but it comes down to the fact that Patriots took a lot of time out of the game, and the Seahawks only allowed Wilson to throw 21 times. But he makes the right decisions and does the right things. Almost, I'm not quite sure whether it was more Patriots defense that kind of stuttered the Hawks a little bit from what their normal offense should be, but Wilson did everything you kind of feel he can do with what's around him still.
I mean, that's a good point, because I to expand upon that from my perspective, I don't think he's ever going to be anything but that.
Mm.
I don't think you're ever going to be able to kind of put him in a very kind of strict, rigid system and he's going to flourish. I think he's always going to be a little bit of, he's very efficient, he's very, very clever, he uses his head a lot and he doesn't make bonehead decisions, but I don't think it's ever going to be completely neat and structured. I think what they need to do is they need to find, you know, players. I mean, imagine if they picked up, and I'm not saying that it's going to happen, I doubt it can because of the way that their cap situation is, if they're going to pay Lynch and they're also going to pay Wilson, but someone like Randall Cobb, you know, yeah. His ability to, you know, work on the fly as the quarterback, you know, is moving around. He's shown that with Rodgers. Someone like him in that offense would be fantastic.
Yeah, because you saw, in a few plays there early on, especially when the Patriots just weren't going to rush. They were only trying to rush three at times and just spying Wilson there in the pocket. But he just had so much time back there in those few early plays. But the Patriots secondary were just glued to the Seahawks receivers. So Wilson had so much time looking for somebody, but they didn't have anybody that's able to get that separation and make that play.
Baldwin and Kearse, to be fair to them, are pretty good at that, but there is better players in the league at doing that.
So that's obviously a massive thing to look forward to in terms of the interest of what's going to happen to the Seahawks next season, but I guess we'll touch on that a little bit later. But conversely, obviously the Patriots went with that very different type of game plan with all those quick passes, getting the ball out as we thought, but they had success doing it, unlike, say, the Broncos tried with screens and such last year and even earlier this year against the Seahawks. The Patriots found a better way of managing to get their players in mixed matches and finding targets for Brady and getting open.
I think it was important, the opening drive that the Patriots had, in that they completed a few quick passes. Brady kind of got into a nice groove early doors, but I have to say, I thought the Patriots wide receivers and Gronk were outstanding. I mean, Edelman after the catch continually sort of gained, he caught the ball, caught two, you know, gained 2 or 3 yards. Amendola down the stretch has looked the player that threatened to be that player, you know, during his time with the Rams and then last year before he got injured. And then you've also got the fact that Gronk just Gronk looks unstoppable.
I mean, they set their stall out on that very first play, a screen out to Gronk out on Sherman's side.
Yeah.
He only got the 2 yards in the end as Irvin went over to make the tackle, but that type of game plan and getting Gronk involved and trying to make those, as you said, Edelman after the catch was outstanding. Being able to make those yards once he got the ball in his hands quickly. I think why maybe one of the reasons why the Patriots managed to be successful at doing that, obviously offensive planning from McDaniels and Brady, but more, I really wonder how much the Seahawks and their injuries with Sherman, Thomas and Chancellor seem to play maybe a lot more than we really think in terms of...
I definitely 100% think that it was a factor in the game. You know,
they were just tentative going into some tackles and contact. They weren't... Sherman wasn't as physical as you expect him to be.
How can you be as... You know, it's like if you've ever played with a niggle or an injury, you can't be the person that you are 100% fit. And the way that team is built, it's built on physicality, you know, being up close and personal with people. And if you're injured and you can't be like that you know, every single down. I think there's going to be time when you're exposed. But I also think that the Seahawks have struggled a little bit in terms of, you know, when they won the Super Bowl last year, they had that really, really great rotation up front with their pass rushers and obviously injuries. And then they lost. Who did they lose midway through the game with a concussion? It's escaped me now. But I think that was a big blow. You know, just because of the fact that, you know, keeping these pass rushers fresh, especially when, you know, the Patriots were running as many plays as they are with their up-tempo offense.
Yeah, it just seems at the end of the season here that the season has taken its toll a little bit on that pass rush that isn't, as you say, what it was last year. And the few injuries around that obviously doesn't help. But I do also like the fact that, again, that first play, you're trying to get the Patriots, they're basically asking Sherman, first play of the game, to try and make a tackle on Gronk, most likely, out there wide, and almost that type of Patriot way of trying to really push the weaknesses of the opposition, and they did it so well. But again, it's going to be another fascinating thing looking at the Seahawks going forward in the off-season, because you've got Maxwell as a free agent, and maybe they can't afford to keep hold of him, but he'd be an amazing pickup for somebody else.
I think he'll end up in, you've just got a feeling he'll end up with either Gus Bradley or Dan Quinn. It seems a real, real nice fit, especially if Quinn could get him, as an initial pickup to really kind of help be the blueprint of what he wants to do there in Atlanta.
Yeah, so what was other takeaways from the game? We obviously, I just keep thinking back actually to how the Gronk TD, that catch he made for that one, is such a kind of underrated catch and something that's a bit lost on how a big guy has managed to hold on to that ball over his head as he's running out of room there in the corner.
Yeah, because I think the problem is everyone's kind of jumped on the fact that how have they put, you know, KJ Wright on Gronk? And it's like, yeah, fine, but it's a perfect throw. And, you know, Gronk has exceptional hands, and he's an exceptionally gifted athlete for someone that, you know, he just looks like a bionicle man when he's running. It's incredible how someone looks as clunky as he does, yet as athletic as he is.
Yeah. And by all accounts, hasn't stopped going at 100% intensity since the Super Bowl, with his partying and celebrating. It's just been non-stop ever since.
He is just the frat dude that never grew up. And I guess that, and it's funny when you consider the Patriot way, and the very sort of, you know, clone business-like mentality that they've created in that locker room, and how someone is sort of free-spirited as Gronk, and how Belichick and the coaching staff have managed to mesh that within the organisation, I think it's fascinating.
That is really, he doesn't really fit their mould, as you say, so it's been brilliant how Belichick and that team have integrated him, and I think overall you just look at the victory and think about how the word I like to use probably is evolve, that the Patriots through Belichick and Brady have just kept evolving, that they finally got over this hurdle, but they've been so close, and they've, you think about the changes in players that they're continually moving on. They've moved on Logan Mankins, they brought in Revis this year, Tlaib went last year, but they've evolved and kept competitive and done it again.
Well, the way I look at it is that, and I think Damshek talked about, you know, Gronkowski becoming fully healthy, you know, during sort of week five, week six. But I genuinely think that, you know, when people break down the season, it will be the loss at Kansas City, which is almost the defining moment where, you know, everybody is questioning, you know, the Patriots, you know, Brady's arm's gone, you know, Brady's done, is Belichick finish, you know, his methods are outdated and all the rest of it. And all Belichick comes out and says is, run to Cincinnati. Yeah. I mean, it just personifies, you know, where they were and where they got to, and his ability to, as you say, you know, you think of the from the first Super Bowl that they won to where they are now, you know, in that sort of a 15-year period. But at the same time, what you've also got is within the season how much they've evolved.
Yeah, they managed to adapt, and you look at their different strategies and game plan. They have the week where they bring in Jonas Gray and they run him and pound it away, and he scores, was it 4 touchdowns?
Yeah.
And then they go back to kind of Brady throwing passes and getting Gronk involved, and they try and integrate a new player like LaFell this year to try and stretch the field a bit. But
even in the Super Bowl, when you're thinking that they're going to run Blunt down the throats of the Seahawks, in comes Shane Vereen and has double-digit pass catches out the backfield and is starting to run up the gut. And you're thinking, they just have a knack of spotting stuff and not being afraid to make changes that are needed, as opposed to just sticking with the status quo.
And I think that's what you mentioned, obviously, before, when we've talked about the Seahawks in terms of things like the Harvin move, being able to almost, not you don't have to do it publicly, but almost admit to an extent when you're wrong or you need to make a change. And
exactly. Surprise that the two teams that are most willing to, you know, just, you know, admit that there is, that they need to move on from something, or they need to make a change here and there, ended up in the Super Bowl?
Yeah, they work their way through the season, winning games however they need to, and it resulted in a great Super Bowl. And
there is no room for your ego as a coach. You have to be able to leave that at the door. I truly, truly believe that. If you need an ego in the sense of to protect your organization and your players, but in terms of if you have that one-track mind as in this is the way that we're going to do it come hell or high water, you're going to come up short. And I think that's one of the... And, you know, listening to Pete Carroll on the sideline and the way that he goes about it, and the way that Belichick goes about it, but the one, you know, two completely contrasting people, but the defining thing that I get with those guys is that they have a unique ability to kind of see what needs to be done and evolve and move with it. You know, as we've said, Patriots are week to week, but as you've mentioned there, Harvin, they lost Harvin, they went back and leaned heavily on Lynch. You know, you think about the start of the year, you know, in that dynasty league that we're in, I picked up Christy and Michael for next year.
Yeah. Turbin was quite high on a lot of people fantasy wise for this season. They thought they were gonna go more committee and save Lynch a little, and it almost, that's what happened, but with not too much success early on. But Lynch came good at the right time for them, and they found a way also to change once they moved on from Harvin and get Wilson and Lynch as basically the two leading rushers in the league. Almost, but this off season and these coming, is the biggest test almost for this team and Carroll.
That was what I was about to ask you. You know, leading on from that, where do you think these two teams go from here? And looking at the Seahawks first, what's your kind of take?
Well, the first thing is you feel like Pete Carroll is exactly the right type of coach to one get them over all these issues and negativity and almost potential infighting that could occur as a result, or even a few words that have said that feel like it has occurred from the play call and the way that game finished. And it was heartbreaking and just obviously shocking to a lot of the defensive guys how that happened. And Carroll's got to find a way to keep everyone together and start anew and move on from it. And he's done really well at saying, yes, it's on him, it was his decision. And even though Wilson keeps saying, well, it was bad from him, but that evolved, that's the first step obviously for the Seahawks to overcome before going into next year. Because you kind of saw there, it's one of the things that's almost been brewing, you feel, from the Seahawks, from people who, there's obviously these lovers and haters of the Seahawks because of their kind of almost their attitude and the way they carry themselves at times, because they're so on the edge and so intense, that some people who a little bit more on the hater side, and I kind of saw it there at the end, all that, that the frustration all spilled over within the Bennett encroachment and the fight and Irvin being ejected, that this is now the first time in 2 years that this team has had to feel defeat. And potentially they thought they were just cruising almost to a second Super Bowl win. And so now that, that mentality and trying to change that and move forward from the fact that they've come close and lost is going to be the biggest test, almost mentally rather than physically, in how they play the game.
Yeah, and extending that further, the changes to the backroom staff are interesting. Obviously, Dan Quinn is gone, but I think a big loss there is the Raiders hire of Ken Norton Jr., who, with the linebacking coach for the last 4 years, has done a tremendous job with the likes of KJ Wright, Bobby Wagner, and possibly would have been a ready-made replacement there to step up. So, you know, there's always turnover within organisations, but, you know, continuity on the back of a loss is always a positive. So that'll be something to watch out. And then beyond that, I still think it, you know, beyond all the psychological and the hires and stuff, it's, you've got to pay Lynch. You've got to pay Lynch.
I mean, there's talk that maybe he gets a bit more of a bump for this year, maybe for one more year, but it also comes down to what do you see. They obviously know more about what they feel his physical well-being and body is capable of. He's had some few back injuries. Is it, it's almost, that's the only reason you wouldn't want to put another big contract in place for him going forward, is how long you think he can keep going.
Yeah, I think if you can offer a almost a 3-year deal that's got all that guaranteed money tied into the front end, which is essentially what you're talking about with that bump, I think that that's the way forward, because I think that, echoing what I talked about earlier, in the sense of that it runs through Lynch and Wilson with his off the cuff kind of plays and stuff. I think if you don't have Lynch and you force Wilson to be more within that structure and that very kind of rigid offense, I think it's going to make it extremely difficult for them to do what they need to do.
Do you think, obviously, one nice little piece that emerged was obviously Chris Matthews had a great Super Bowl, over 100 yards and that touchdown. Having a big tall receiver is an added piece that's obviously emerged. So.
Paul Richardson to come back from injury potentially as well. He was rounding into a nice pickup in his rookie season. There's questions with all teams, and I think obviously, you know, because these two teams are in the Super Bowl, there's more big kind of hot takes because it's right on the tip of the tongue. Patriots.
I did just want to say one final thing though. What else is happening in the NFC West? You still just at this point would put the Seahawks straight in as divisional winners this point.
that's a very good point, because you've got an injured Carson Palmer coming back, unless Logan Thomas potentially develops, which you can't see, given the fact that they played Ryan Lindley over him in the playoff game.
There'll be question marks over their defense with Bowles going, and there was talk obviously of Dick LeBeau going, but he hasn't arrived there Arizona, so.
Fletcher is his name, I think, internally. So.
There's a few question marks there. We don't really want to mention the what we feel is almost a bit of a mess in San Francisco.
Oh, it's turned into, you know, it's clown car. it's circus is coming to town, because, you know, after losing John Harbaugh and, you know, talk of, you know, bringing in the hot young, offensive coordinator, and Gaze looked like he was all signed, sealed and delivered, and then to kind of give it to Tom Sula, and then you're going after, you know, a, you know, sort of offensive minded guru that's, you know, to fix, and I know not fix Kaepernick's the wrong word, but that's the kind of, you know, thought process.
Optimizing him almost, yeah. In a way.
And then you promote the quarterback coach, which has struggled to really develop him, and I don't know. And losing Vic Fangio, I think, is huge. I think there's a lot of question marks, and I think it's going to be... It's got 6 and 10 written all over it for me, because I think Kaepernick has got enough about him to make sure that they get 6 wins, but I do worry. And I don't... I think as well, there's something about that stadium that... nobody really comes in and feels like it's a particularly difficult place to go and play.
Not a home field advantage, as yet. It's just a beautiful stadium. Be a great host of a Super Bowl, but a neutral site. The Seahawks are obviously favourites to probably walk back into taking that division and getting back to the playoffs next year, depending on the off-season, obviously. But as you said, the Patriots... I think what's exciting about the Patriots is wanting to see and hear about what the Brady Belichick era and their almost what do they still want out of the game. And you do just see that now they've won this, you almost see there's such a rejuvenation almost in the fact that, you know what, 5 would be amazing. And you can see that Brady can still do it and deliver at this stage, at this age of his career, that you've got to think the motivation in terms of those two will carry this team forward again. You thought with a loss maybe at this Super Bowl, there might be then question marks about whether they can keep trying to get that close and winning, and you know what, we don't need another Super Bowl, we'll call it there type thing. But having got this win almost encourages and motivates them to move on next year.
Oh, I think it's a massive springboard, and I think if they can, draft wisely at the top of the draft and bring in some help on the interior of that line, I think that would be a massive, massive help. Because let's be honest, is that, you know, I think it's all about allowing Brady to step up into that pocket, so that would be a big push. Running back, I think if they can maybe let Ridley out the door, maybe sit, sort of sign Vereen, and you know, there's been an absolutely loaded running back class.
It is, but you've also still got Jonas Gray is still a great piece that's sitting on the on the outside there. I think pass rush is the one thing that they could do better as well.
Yeah, and then obviously, what did they do with Revis? There's talk of potentially finding a restructure of that contract. I have a sneaking suspicion something's going to work out, because, you know, I think as much as Revis has been a guy that has maximised his earning potential throughout his career, at 30 years old, he's made a lot of money, and I think once you taste success, as much as the money's nice, I think it's difficult to say, oh, well, I'm going to go and take an extra $4 million and I'm going to go play for the Bills or the Jets, the two teams.
I think that'll obviously be the question. If he does not take what the Patriots can offer him and he goes elsewhere, then it's almost really sad in terms of his mentality on the game, because his best chance to win, if you say the taste of success is there for him and that he realises, you know what, rings are a little bit more important than a few million at this stage, when he's got a pretty decent lump sum in the bank, you would assume. So, but the other good thing about the Patriots is the youth in their defense. They've got a, like, kind of second, third year guys, like Collins and Jones. They had a younger average age in the Super Bowl than the Seahawks. And even with Brady in there, they've got a young team around him, which is really exciting for the Patriots going forward. And you just have to pencil them in as the number one seed at this
without
stage.
A doubt. And broadening it out, we were going to touch upon some of our thoughts, in terms of season reviews and looking forward. They are, at the moment, for me, still the cream of the crop within the AFC. I think Steelers will be a team that, you know, if they can sort out elements of their defence, they're going to be in and around.
That's going to be a massive transition from Dick LeBeau obviously moving along. What that changes and how that works.
It's a massive transition in terms of you know, that he is the archetypal figurehead. But beyond that, you know, Keith Butler, who they've named, has been there, and there is really, really good things thought about him. So in that regard, I don't think it's going to be a massive sweeping change, because, you know, he's worked so closely with LeBeau before. The interesting thing is that, you know, I'm reading a lot of stuff here that, you know, they've bought, the Titans have bought in Dick LeBeau as a assistant head coach. Where does that leave Ray Horton? So,
I mean, these kind of, we've seen it a bit now with the, a lot of the front office moves of the recent months, that there's new and evolving job titles and job descriptions, as there is in the real world altogether these days. You can find a fascinating job title and job description for anything these days. But yeah, trying to fit in against kind of almost old school structured regimes, that trying to find these new, it'll be fascinating to watch how those type of things play out. I think as well for the Steelers, you've got that aging defense of Ike Taylor and Troy. If they move on, it almost might help them move on, in terms of they're not as they were. So as you say, the Steelers are competitive there, but, and then the Colts offensively are one of the dangers in that side of things, but they need to make a few improvements, as we discussed after the championship games. But as you say, Patriots sat well ahead at this stage. Because the Broncos have also got a lot to sort out.
I think they're going to be in a right mess, because they can't sign, doesn't seem to be that they can sign both of the Thomases. And you're going to then mean that probably Julius is going to then hit the open market. There's going to be no Wes Welker. Cody Latimore didn't do much in his rookie season, which bodes not particularly well, given the fact that you are going to be losing Welker. Running back is still an issue, as good as Caldwell looked. There are still problems with the O-line, and given the fact that Peyton's mobility is not great as it is, and that if he gets nicked up at all, I just think that they are a classic sort of team that potentially is going to go to the playoffs but cannot go all the way.
And it, as you said there, with Peyton and his mobility, it really is going to be interesting to see what type of offense is run there with Kubiak and Peyton, just almost completely opposite.
Really interesting.
If we look across at the other side of things with the NFC, we obviously mentioned the Seahawks probably will sort themselves out in that division with the mess that we think is going on there in San Francisco. But
yeah, and I think as well, when you throw the Rams in there, and the Rams have been another team that's kind of looked at trying to find a hot, you know, innovative coordinator to really spark that offense moving forward with all the talent that they've got on the defensive side. And they've promoted Signieri, is it? I think that's how you pronounce his name. The quarterback's coach, which again is another hire that is less, almost a case of, we've looked around, people have turned us down, and we've been backed into a corner. But
I suppose, you know, if you're a betting man with the Rams this season, probably the most interesting bet will be, how many games does Bradford get to start this year before he injures himself? He's had a horrible time there, and you just don't know what's going to happen. We might find out a lot more, obviously.
Well, yeah,
come the draft.
Well, put it this way: if you know, the free agent list of free agent quarterbacks isn't particularly great, and then the fact that they're talking about Jameis Winston, it seems to be the consensus within all the mock drafts. And in regards to the off-field stuff, he will go one. You know, then it's a case of who's gonna be brave enough to take Mariota and bring in the massive elements of the Oregon system. And beyond that, no one's going to touch anybody. You know, you're talking probably sort of fourth round, fifth round kind of, you know, projects that are going to maybe end up landing on your practice squad and not even make the 53.
Yeah, so I think the most fascinating watch in most of the NFC is going to be the change in Atlanta. They, as we know, they've got great pieces on offense.
Yeah.
And
you've got great offensive coordinator hire.
Yeah. Change of head coach. What mentality that that brings to the team, with Quinn in charge. So they're going to be a great team to watch. But it's so hard to predict that division, as we saw this year with all four teams really making a bit of a mess of it. And so I like to see the Falcons, though, as really improving on what they did last year. But and then I think overall, the other teams that were big this season to look at are thinking of Packers and Cowboys. Can they get back? And it obviously comes down to the free agency for the Cowboys.
Yeah, that's key. I mean, I think there is a genuine... There seems to be a big thought that Peterson will end up there. But I was listening today to Pro Football Talk, and it was very, very interesting what Mike Florio was saying about the fact that the reasons why Peterson wants to get reinstated as soon is because that if he has to wait until April and free agency's already been out, a lot of teams have had to have bitten the bullet and made the move on somebody and pulled the trigger.
Yeah.
Because you can't put all your eggs in there. Well, will Peterson be available? And what's when, what, why? So that's interesting. And let's be honest, the Giants are going to be an improved team. Philadelphia, you would imagine, especially if they do go out and get Mariota, which I suspect there's going to be a big play and there's going to be a lot of talk come.
Yeah, now as well.
About them moving up.
Now with the changes there in terms of their management structure, that Kelly now is in charge of personnel side of things. You feel if he really is keen on the lad, he's going to try and do everything to try and get him, I'm sure. And it almost helps that, Tampa with the first pick, isn't it? That they, if they went quarterback route, would probably more than likely want to go Winston and keep the boy in Florida. So,
yeah, I think it makes sense.
It helps.
He's more pro ready as well. It's just the only issue is going to be is the off field stuff. But
The thing is about a lot of the off field stuff that you have heard from him is the type of off field stuff that just shows, as people say, immaturity. And almost a bit more naivety and just being a bit young. Like, it's not the type of almost... there's almost more troublesome off-field stuff.
Yeah, but the rape allegations are a huge concern, especially in light of what the allegations are, but it seems I'm not trying to dumb them down and say, well, especially in light of the current culture and the domestic abuse things, they're shocking allegations, in any day of age, but even more so they're more under the spotlight given the fact that we've had everything with Peterson, Rice, and Hardy over the last 12 months.
Yeah, I think. What I was just trying to, almost just to clarify what I was trying to get to more, was just the type of thing seems to be his issues have evolved from almost just life on some college campus and that type of juvenile type behaviour, not necessarily the off-field stuff, which involves things like drugs and potential things like guns and that side of thing, which that all... the kind of environment and people that you then end up surrounding yourself with evolve like the Alden Smith type issues and things that don't seem to go away and they keep coming back and recurring and that side of thing. So it's the type of thing where you feel like if you did manage him, you can keep on top of them. But
it's just how prepared is a team for something from his past to come and bite them back in the ass, so to speak.
I mean, speaking of which, you could just touch on the fact there's those type of issues going on in Cleveland.
My biggest takeaway was really from the year was all, outside of the Super Bowl and some of the headline teams is when you consider all of that fanfare when Manziel was drafted and Penn came in and had that really, you know, Manziel didn't start, but he had that really, really good positive start to where they are today. Oh.
That is one of the things that is written down in my notes here as a season takeaway. The Browns are still just a mess. They've gone from, well, they're just a factory of sadness. It really is, and you really feel sorry for their fans almost. That
it must be heartbreaking to follow them. You know, when you consider that when they drafted Gilbert, who was supposed to be the premier, one of the premier sort of corners coming out, then they traded back up and you got Manziel, and despite all of the question marks about him, you're not telling me that everybody wasn't excited and expecting him to at least show flashes of brilliance and greatness during the season. And then the fact is that now they are, you know, Jordan Cameron's probably not going to come back. You know, Gordon's gone for the year. You know, they lost Alex Mack's going to be coming off a broken leg, and you just like.
And then I saw something today on the Saturday morning one-liners from Pro Football Talk, which just kind of sums up a couple of things that the Browns website people have done this season. And it says on there technically that soon to be free agent quarterback Buster Screen, like, there's no news from the club about what's going to happen there, but some guy writing the website article has already made the point that he's going to be a soon to be free agent, but he might get a contract by then. It's just the type of mess that seems to be surrounding things that go on there, which is a real shame, as you say, after what looked like such a great start to this season just gone.
There's talk of that draft picks are going to be taken off them because of Ray Farmer was texting, you know, Kyle Shanahan, and there's talk that it wasn't even Farmer that was, Farmer was doing texting, but it was Haslam that was telling Farmer and you just like,
and
you know,
really just now understand why Shanahan wanted out, and it's been the best thing for him, you feel, to get out. And
he's going to land on his feet, because in that, in his offensive system, you know, Ryan's going to be able to, you know, execute exactly what he is. He is now ripe for a head coach, you know, one of the hot kind of head coaching candidates come 2016.
Yeah, it's going to be great to see the changes that might take place there with these. And when you see changes of coordinators, you just get, I'm already so excited about next year, seeing what the Falcons can do. Seeing how that defense might change,
you know, and some of the free agents that you know the likes of, you know, Dez Bryant, there's no way he will hit the open market, for example, because they will franchise tag him at worst. But when you look at some of the others, and that you're ironing about them because you're not quite sure if they're going to come back, and you're speculating where they're going to end up, and you're just thinking, oh wow, if he ends up there, how great would it be for that?
And I mean, if you take a look at the NFL.com piece by Chris Wessling, you've got the top 25 free agents available, and as you say, a lot of them won't hit the market, but some of them are going to be guys that are just going to demand so much money that they probably will hit the market because their teams just can't afford them. And there's some really talented players on there, and Sue and Houston on the defensive side are topping the list, but things like the Niners and Mike Iupati.
Cobb's an interesting one. You mentioned it earlier in the year with Cobb because of the fact that, you know, with Adams coming on so strongly down the stretch, will they just, you know, can they afford to pay, you know, Cobb and Nelson?
Yeah. And there'll be a lot of teams who would like a Cobb-type player, as you said, there with the Seahawks, potentially.
You know, CJ Spiller has shown flashes, you know, will he get paid, especially with the, you know, the depth of running backs within this draft, by all accounts? So,
and just on that list, the number 25 player there, just with the whole mess that's going on in Cleveland, do you think Jordan Cameron will just think, you know what, I really just want to move on from here?
Oh, there's no way he will go back. I mean, the only way he's going back is if they franchise tag him. And I think the three concussions will mean that they won't franchise tag him. But, you know, a healthy Jordan Cameron is an explosive tight end. And don't be surprised if he ends up at Atlanta, was where I'm kind of speculating.
Love a bit of speculation. there's obviously so much speculating can be done now so soon after this season, and it's going to be a great off season to watch. So I think just it almost ties in quite nicely just to say that obviously this podcast we've started this year, we've gone episode 21 now, and I think what we're looking to try and do over this off season is keep it going and try and be as regular as possible, but obviously with not the weekly fantasy matches to cover, we're going to try and drop a few podcasts in and around all the events that take place over the calendar year. That's of the off season. So try and get something out to you around the draft, and then involving free agency,
combine.
Yeah. So we'll keep this show on the road and be trying to keep this going into next season. But just a couple things really to tie up from this season just gone in terms of fantasy wise. We've got our playoff challenge, and you finally won something this year.
Get it in. But yeah, it was all down to, as I've said on Twitter to a few people, it was all to do with, you know, if you are lucky enough to pick the two Super Bowl winners and back yourself with those two sides, then potentially you can ride those picks to a win. So, and that's what it transpired to be. You know, if I'd have picked Blunt instead of Shane Vereen, I'd have potentially been the top.
Yeah, I think looking at the guy who ended up winning overall, as opposed to your lineup, he's also Amendola rather than Baldwin, worked out better.
Right.
And I think, in fact, the Patriots overall scored better than the Seahawks, but on the defensive side of things. But yeah, you've got all Seahawks and Patriots all on their 4x multipliers for the Super Bowl. So you took down our lead with 850, and I came in second with 764. For a moment there, I thought I could take you in the Super Bowl, but
yeah, I mean, it all came to the fact that they started handing it off to Vereen instead of Blunt, really.
Yeah, because I had Blunt and Curse versus kind of Baldwin and Vereen for you, so that's where we differed. And then, yeah, overall 945 was the winning score, so still 100 points short.
Yeah, and yourself, as you say, it was down to Amendola over Baldwin and Blunt over Vereen, but no, I'm pretty pleased with that one.
Thank you to everybody who took part in our league and joined up. So we had 11 guys playing in the Move the Sticks playoff challenge.
Much appreciated. Much appreciated that everyone has continued to tune in and listen.
Yeah, it's been great, and the great reception that we've had from everybody. So I think there's one other little thing I wanted to type just to confirm that pick'em wise over the course of the year, I think we both got the Super Bowl correct.
Yes, I flip-flopped, and I ended up taking the Seahawks, but I got there literally 10 seconds after the ball had kicked off, so I stumbled into it being right. Yeah, nice. I changed my mind so many times.
It was a tough one to pick.
I came to the conclusion at the end that it was going to be the Seahawks who were going to win it, because I just felt that they would eventually, wear down the Patriots. But as it transpired, you know, Brady was exceptional. He really, really was.
Yeah, it was. So pick'em wise, I ended up with 2,090 points. You ended up with 2,030, but you know, you had a 1 week where some of your picks didn't get in.
Yeah, I had a bit of a nightmare with that. But
pretty close overall, but it sums up the season really, that overall, for example, I had 63% correct, which is almost about 6-7% down on last season, and not very good because it was such an up and down competitive season, it seemed.
It was an odd season, really, when you consider it, because I was when we were talking, you know, we were texting before about what we're going to talk about, and you were thinking, okay, big takeaways, and I was thinking, okay, so what's been a real standout kind of moment, something that really kind of etched in my head, and I'm really, really, apart from the playoffs, where it just everything seemed to kick off, where you've got, you know, the Detroit Lions, you know, with the dodgy play call with the push in the back, and then you've got the crazy, you know,
Des Bryant catch, no catch, yeah, in Green Bay, and
then you've got the crazy, you know, overtime win from Seattle, and then you got the Malcolm Butler play on the last second of the game. It went nuts, but I didn't think there was any real defeat. I looked back and it was, you know, I remember getting really excited when Manziel came on and drove the length of the field, just because it that had been bottled up so much and finally it was released. I remember certain moments getting really, really excited when J.J. Watt was just taking over games. When I remember the game against the Titans, as silly as that sounds, where he knocks Mettenberg out the game, essentially, and then Locker comes in, and on the next play, he beats the tackle and strip sack, and he's running halfway down the field. But beyond that, you're thinking, well...
Yeah, I know, it was filled with off-season issues, which took up a lot of the time and talking points, which is obviously not great. But yeah, it was so kind of almost week to week. And I think when you do just look back, I think almost J.J. Watt was the standout guy, as you've just said, that I seem to, if you were to put up, obviously Rodgers wins MVP, but Watt got an unprecedented amount of votes for a defensive player and stood out.
Problem is, in essence, what you've got here is that Tony Dungy, you know, got a lot of stick for the Bobby Wagner MVP vote. And the thing that I can't kind of get, I can completely see where he's coming from in a perverse kind of sense, because if you define MVP, very much it's the case of the most valuable player to their team.
Yeah.
Then there's a case to be made that Wagner is more important to the Seahawks because of you look at the way that he came back and everything so it seemed to kind of come together defensively than Rodgers is to the Packers.
Yeah, and if you use that theory, and also the Dave Damaschek Jenga theory, or some people are calling Jenga, everybody seems to pronounce it differently these days. But
it's Gronk.
It is Gronk, because you then take J.J. Watt, as we say, all last season, when he was out of the Texans, him not being there through injury the year before. They were still losing. And even this year he's played epic games, but they still haven't won games as a result of his great performances. But maybe that's just a fact of him being a defensive player.
It almost needs to be redefined, almost, you know, what, as much as I hate soccer ball over here, but, you know, when they name the footballer of the year, they're naming the player that has had the most impact, you know, on a more kind of global overarching kind of feel to it, as opposed to, you know, if you, for example, over here called that award MVP,
it would
be a completely different person who would get it to saying, okay, who's had the best season this year?
I mean, if you just look at this last season in terms of soccer, you'd probably give it to Neuer more than anybody for what he did for Germany to win the World Cup. He was more valuable than Ronaldo because he didn't help his team to a title and etc. So.
I think it's just the semantics of the wording of the award, and I'd prefer it to be less about MVP and about, okay, so almost the player of the year, you know, player of the year, and then it becomes a case of, well, for me, the player of the year is what?
Yeah, in terms of, because I like to view, if you just put, almost you go position by position, how far he dominates his position over the next guy at that position.
You said, I'll give you props and props. Jeepers, creepers, this is a real low point. I'll give you a lot of credit for 32-year-old man should not be saying props. I'll give you a lot of credit for what you said early on. And you were championing this, what, probably about week 8, was it? You know, you were saying he is light years ahead of everybody in terms of, you know, when you break it down position by position.
Yeah, because you look at Rodgers and you say, well, he's great, but then Brady's great, and because the quarterback is now being played in so many different ways as well, you've got Wilson's great at what he does, so it's getting harder to define the quarterback position in terms of what is success and valuable, and you're almost like, I mean, if you use that theory of, if you take a guy out of a team, what would the Seahawks be without Wilson? You put in, say, a pocket passer in that team, there'll be nothing. They need that movement quarterback for what they run.
Well, we're going to potentially see it next year if Lynch doesn't come back.
Yeah,
so yeah, it's an interesting one, and I think the semantics of the word most valuable, because everybody defines most valuable in a slightly different way that fits their own rhetoric and narrative that they want to push out there.
Couldn't have said it better myself. So I guess that really sums up everything from the season just gone.
A monster podcast. It's been fun.
It has been fun. We've had a few technicals along the way, but we should be seamless to our listeners out there.
21st century technology and all that jazz.
So, as we said, we'll look to try and do something going forward around probably the combines, the next on the calendar, but also need to touch on things from more of a specific fantasy side of things in terms of where our leagues are heading next year.
We need to start orientating our thoughts on. And I think we need to get our heads together in terms of, you know, what leagues are we going to continue outside of the MTS and the HOL.
Yes, we've got a few people listening to the podcast who potentially want to get involved in some of our leagues, and obviously we'll probably cull some inactive people along the way.
we love a good cull. I love a Facebook cull.
Oh,
I also enjoy nothing better than sporadically every 6 months going through my phone book and taking like the 40 names of people that I really don't.
Good times.
That I have down to sort of 30, because I'm
enjoy a Twitter block too.
Oh.
So, but we can all hide behind.
Like, you're in a date with new people following you, aren't you?
I am indeed. I'm holding them all back.
Batting them off with a stick.
Yeah, I'm going to keep my followers to a lower
level. Right. I have a strict 50 policy and it's getting quite tough at the moment.
But yeah, so looking to next season in our leagues, I mean, already I'm kind of looking at my team and I'll probably be voting thinking, I don't really want to keep a league, because that's where it's tricky. If we've not finalised that, when people are looking at their own lineups and.
Yeah, I mean, my vote at the moment is no keeper, because I think I think it's all about the redraft, and it's year to year, and you know, if you're going to do keepers, I think you go down the dynasty route, which we've done, and we've gone full hog on one of those in another league, which I think we definitely stick with.
Although, if we're going keepers, everything for me will depend on where Peterson might end up.
Yeah.
And that would obviously change a few things. But
My vote is no keepers. No keepers.
Okay.
Complete redraft. And I won't screw the draft up this year.
Touch wood.
Well, there's still time for it to screw up.
So, on that bombshell, I guess we should finish up here and just remember that you can obviously get hold of us on Twitter. I am at Stephen Rudkin. The podcast is at @pipe_slippers.
And I am Roger M. Kirby.
And we shall see you next time.
Ciao bella. Oh, I've been sipping a tea.